Welcome back to the Third Pedal Podcast. I'm Zach.
I'm Jacob.
Welcome back to the show. Guys, this week it is all about history, not on purpose, just what we decided to talk about. We're talking about history of seatbelts, history of stop and go lights. I think that's what they're called. Traffic lights. First ever car accidents, and then some crazy car recalls, the largest car recalls you guys are gonna expect. Not gonna expect the last one. I don't know. You'll see. So what's going on? What's new with you?
Oh man, what is new with me? Oh, I finally put some wheels on the WRX, so that was exciting. OEM 16 inch little guys for a while, pretty much since I had the car, and they sit so far into the wheel wells, and I've had my eye out for like a specific look of wheel for a while, but I didn't want to drop like crazy cash to buy new stuff, so I found a good set on Marketplace, a nice set of Koenigs. I forget which specific wheel they are, but 18 by 8.5, they fit really, really well. Sweet. It was crazy. Like, the car's still rusty. It's still definitely like a 20 or 30 foot car, but just that addition on it makes it look so much more aggressive. It looks awesome.
Yeah. I saw that on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
Third Pedal Crew page. Guys, if you're not on there yet, get on there. Share your build. Share the stuff you're working on. Some dude posted last week about his Mustang, right?
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, by the way, I've also driven a Lexus LFA and like all these other supercars and crazy stuff. He started posting pictures of that. So like, that's what they're for. I mean, it's not all like bragging about the cars that you've driven and whatever, but like, that's super interesting. That's the stories that we like sharing with each other.
Especially like as the summer's kicking up. Like, I don't know if you saw GR Corolla guy, but like, he's pretty local. He's going to come, like, he said he tosses the keys. So that's exciting.
We're for sure driving that.
I was like, you don't know what you just signed up for, but 100%. Yeah.
How much
funny
extended
too.
Warranty did you buy?
The range of cars that are posted on this crew page it's ridiculous. It's all over the map. I won't begin to name it because it's literally anything you can imagine, from rally cars to drag cars to old trucks. Like, everything's on there.
Yeah.
So definitely check it out. Third Pedal Podcast crew. It'll be linked below. Follow us on the social media stuff. You'll keep up with our episodes. But on YouTube, definitely like, subscribe, turn on notifications, comment, all that jazz. We're trying to build up some momentum there. But on Spotify, definitely make sure, like, if you guys haven't yet, go leave a review. They're changing the podcast features on Spotify, but if you leave a review of the show, it's just like ranking it 1 to 5 stars. Be honest, but we appreciate the 5 stars. to do that, you can watch the episode on there. You can engage. There's polls and things like that you can engage. So a lot of times, if we're asking a question in the show, there's going to be an option to answer it right there. And then we can go back on that. Like, for instance, in a previous episode, we talked about that fake electric transmission, Zach, if you remember that.
Yeah.
I put a poll in there to say, hey, who would consider driving this? And the options were, I believe it was like, yes, I'd consider it. No, I wouldn't consider it. And how dare you even ask? Weirdly enough, our audience majority voted yes, they'd drive it.
I saw that. Yeah.
I was like, 43%. Okay. Yeah. Which, I mean, I would too. It'd be fun to drive. It'd be fun to try. I don't know if I'd go buy it, but. But anyway, so check that out. Engage with us on Spotify that way. Pretty much anywhere you listen to it, there's a way to engage. And it's not like every creator says something like that, where it really does help. It really does matter with algorithms. So if you enjoy the content, like, share it with friends is the best thing that you can do. But subscribing to stay up to date with, as soon as we release things, you guys see stuff, that super helps too. So we super appreciate it.
So I've got something interesting, and I don't know if this is just being a dad and I'm reading books or learning stuff or whatever, but I've been getting into random tidbits of car history. And I know we talk about this stuff fairly often, different things, but I've got some like small, interesting facts. You ready for this?
Sweet. Super ready for it.
So did you know, I don't know if I should quiz you on this or just tell you.
Ooh, could you make fake multiple choice questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So the first car accident ever recorded. I'll give you
ever recorded. Okay.
Ever recorded. So first, and this is a car, right? So cars had been invented, right?
Okay.
First car accident ever recorded, reported, recorded, whatever. Doesn't matter. Okay. Was it A, before 1875? Was it B, between 1875 and 18? And I almost said 1875 and 1900. Okay. So before 1875, 1900, or was it between 1900 and 1914?
It's weird that you ended on 1914.
I wanted to make it fun.
I mean, it has to be that one, right? The later one, because isn't that like when cars were around? What?
So when was the it? The first car accident ever recorded was in Ohio in 1891.
Really?
Yeah. So
was it a car that was transporting hazardous materials that tipped over?
into the Ohio River. Yes, actually. History repeats itself again. No, it was James Lambert was the guy. They got him on blast. Dude, imagine.
Nice.
Okay, just a side note, sidecar on this.
Yeah.
I bet no Lambert has since been able to drive without being made fun of.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, 100%. Mom, trust me, I'm a good driver. Oh, really? Your great-great-grandfather was the first ever person to crash a car.
Your lineage disagrees.
It's in your blood. So he was driving his single-cylinder gasoline-powered car, which had a top speed of 4 miles per hour at the time, which, how'd you crash?
Yeah, how do single cylinder end? Okay, we'll get. I think that's a thing. So I probably sound stupid saying that, but I want to dive into that. But yeah, how did you?
It was probably left over from the tertiary empire, whatever it was called. You conspiracy theorists know what I'm talking about. 4 miles per hour maximum speed, collided with a tree root and lost control of the vehicle. Oh no, I can't stop. It's like, dude, get out and walk.
Yeah.
You know? So he crashed into a hitching post, which is hilarious.
What?
That's like where you'd like hook up your horse. You're gonna go into the saloon. So hilarious that those things are like, obviously they're there at the same time because as they're phasing out horses as a mode of transportation and everything.
That's awesome.
So funny. 4 miles an hour, crashed into a hitching post. He was not seriously injured, thank goodness. But it sparked a huge wave actually of safety regulations for motor vehicles. That was like, that's actually, I would bet 1892, the EPA or whatever, no, that's not the NTEHSA or whatever, the safety founded. I would bet, I didn't look up that fact. That would have been a great fact to have on hand ready for this one. But I thought that was pretty funny. And it was probably because, it was because of the tree root. But if I had worded that story better, I could have led into this next fact, which is that the first traffic light was installed also in Ohio. Ohio was big in the cars.
They were booming, dude.
Mostly for crashing them and creating regulations.
Yeah, apparently it's like doing cars wrong and then coming up with safety measures for it.
Just classic Ohio. So the first traffic light was actually installed in Cleveland, Ohio in 1914. So
okay.
it took that long for them to be like, yeah, maybe we should tell people when to stop. Start stuff like that.
Weird.
But it was the first one. I found this super interesting. It was only a red and green light. It was like red light, green light game with your friends. But
oh, interesting.
For cars with real life consequences. And it was actually manually operated by an officer. So every intersection, which I mean, 1914, how many cars were there? 12. So, like, but a police officer had to stand at
the intersection. They're all black and white anyway. How did they see the red and yellow? Yeah.
That's great. That's awesome. So it was manual operated. But the first automatic light, which just blew my mind, just the timeline of it all. Mm-hmm. Over 100 years ago, we had the first automatic electrified traffic light. The same exact thing that we have today with the red, yellow, and green.
What?
Automated was invented in 1920, actually by Garrett Morgan, which we may have to do some ancestry look up here. May or may not be a relative of ours.
For those who don't know, our last name is Morgan. So we may have just discovered a pretty big part of Third Pedal Podcast history.
This is why we're
interesting.
It's in our blood, literally.
There we go. It's in our blood.
So yeah, anyways, I thought that was super interesting. That has
very
not,
because cool.
We talked about, what was it? It was like episode 40 years. Something. We talked about the new type of traffic lights that they're trying to implement, someone designed them.
Yeah. That like whole like the render of them reimagined or whatever.
Yeah.
The
word
that they're using for it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Super interesting. So, but that's, it's been 100 years. So like,
wow.
I think I could safely say everyone who's driven ever has used those in American history besides James Lambert, who crashed into a horse post.
Apparently. That's great. Yeah. So I wonder when, see if I can find this quick. When was the first like car to car accident? Car to car accident. Because if the first accident, that's hilarious. He hit a rut of a tree. Like, and probably imagine how that story got twisted. Cause like, I can't imagine like that happened and whatever. And I imagine like afterwards they're like, dude, how did you total your carriage thing or whatever they called it back then?
Your
and he's like,
carriage.
Oh, it was the craziest thing. Like I was driving and a little kid ran into the road and I was like, well, I have to save their life. And so I swerved and I actually broke the wooden rack and pinion in my steering column.
Yeah, right.
And it rode right in. And
I mean, 1891, I think if a kid was running out in the street, they were probably telling him to get back at the factory.
Fair, fair.
That could have been why he was yelling at somebody.
Here we go. So apparently the first automobile crash in the U.S. occurred in 1896 when a motor vehicle collided with a pedal cycle rider.
Weird word, but okay.
Don't know what that is.
Didn't have the term bicycle until later time, apparently.
And then the first...
Oh, was his name James Lambert? He's just hitting everybody.
Joseph.
Oh, that's funny. Wait, James and Joseph? Are we talking about like BC here or something?
On the way to the Last Supper.
Sorry, guys. I got a flat wagon wheel.
I got a flat wagon wheel. I lost a spoke. That's crazy. No, some of that stuff, like, I can't believe... Even looking at like aviation stuff, like some of the stuff that's like hundreds of years old is or hundreds, 100 or like 50 years old or whatever. Like it's crazy how long certain things have been around that like, I don't know when I would have got, like if you would have asked me when was a traffic light, that should have been a quiz too. Like when do you think the first traffic light was invented? Was it, same deal, like 19 to 1920, 1920 to 1940, 1940 to 1960 right. or 1960, 1980? Which one do you think? Like, I never would have guessed. What did you say, 1920?
1920, yeah.
1920. That's crazy to me. I don't know what I probably would have guessed way later than that. I would have guessed 60s, 70s, something like that, right? That's crazy. Well, I 70s. Have a different... Yeah. What? When would you have guessed?
I don't know. That seems kind of late.
Well, I picture like... Okay, this is like, why. It's
if you said 40, if you told me 40s to 60s, I would have believed that.
You would have guessed 40s to 60s.
I
would have guessed like a little later. I picture like the little cars city and like, I guess
that was literally just thinking about that with the blinking yellow light. Literally, I was thinking about Mater and then I was like, it's probably like earlier than I think though. So 40 to 60.
Ah, fair, fair. Yeah, I pictured that era and was like, okay, so then maybe it was caution lights first and then it switched over, but. Yeah, that's interesting. I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, well, I wonder when the caution light was invented, right? Because they had the green and just the straight. Dude, imagine the drag racing at 6 miles an hour when it was just red, right to, I guess it is red, right to green now. But the green, right to red is more what I, dude, they were Flintstones stopping at that time. So that must have been tough.
There's like kids grab one of the giant wheels. We have to go.
Yeah. Did you know that at Brembo actually was founded around the same time, and they called the first braking system heels of steel because that's how they stopped. That was the fastest guy who stopped. His name just happened to be Arturio Brembo. Anyways, that is an incorrect fact.
His name was actually, I don't have his name. It was founded in 61 though. I just looked it up.
Don't actually me.
Well, actually, I've also been diving into some crazy history.
I thought you were doing it again. No, actually.
You're like, how dare you slapped me through the computer. No, so I've been, I feel like this is like a fact that every car person quotes, but doesn't, like, I've never dove into the history of it. And I didn't realize there's so much controversy around it. But I don't know why I got curious earlier this week and was like, okay, I wonder, like, all the time there's the talk of like, oh, did you know Volvo was the one who invented the seatbelt? And then they just gave it away. And like that was always like a thing people have said. And it's like, that's why their cars, that they're the Nokia of cars and blah, blah, blah. Like, so it's been a big focus of them. I've never heard of that,
about the seatbelts.
Oh, really? Mm-mm. Weird. Okay, well, if you just learned that for the first time, yes, in fact, Volvo was the inventor of, I guess I should fact check myself, not of the seatbelt, but of the V-type three-point safety belt. Because before,
okay,
there was optional lap belts. So lap belts were always a thing. And they were very problematic. They caused a lot of pretty bad injuries, as you can imagine. If you're anchored in the middle part of you.
Am I the only one who had like an irrational fear constantly as a kid of being torn in half by getting in an accident with a lap belt.
It was one of those things I like viewed it on the same level. You know, like things you feel like you're way overprepared for from cartoons and stuff. It's like that. The fear of lap belts was like right up there with like falling in the ice for me. I don't know why. Like it's like the same. Quicksand.
I thought it would be a much larger issue.
I was way overprepared for quicksand. So apparently, I'm confused. So 1959, I thought I wrote down 69 before, so I may have had a typo on this. Maybe it was 59. No, it was 59 because I see other dates. Okay, so in 1959, there's a gentleman named Niels Bohlin. He's a Swedish fellow. So he worked at Saab. He's this engineer. He worked on aircraft ejection seats, which is very like, let's zoom out for a second. So ejection seats for airplanes were invented before seatbelts, which is weird to me.
That's funny,
but I digress. So the Volvo president, apparently he had suffered like a big personal loss. Like somebody in his family had passed away due to a traffic incident. As part of the investigation for that, they deemed like, I can't remember if they weren't wearing, I don't think they were wearing any type of seatbelt. And they said like, yeah, if they were restrained, that probably would have saved their life. So at that point, seatbelts were optional, but everybody hated them. They were super clunky. Yeah.
This was also, you said they investigated and discovered that as like the cause. This was also during the time where investigators would come into a crime scene and be like, look, it's a pool of the perpetrator's blood. And they'd be like, ew, clean it up. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like, let's test it for evidence to find out who it was.
Right. So, they didn't run ballistics on the vehicle or anything like that.
Exactly.
But back then you had like crumple zones didn't exist on cars. So you had like these giant steel vehicles that they'd hit and they would, you know, you basically were the inertia. Like there was nothing to slow it down. It was whatever the force was of the two things coming into contact.
Yeah, that's what you're about to experience. Like, you guys ever had a car show and like accidentally like bump into or walk into like a classic car? That thing's like made of solid lead. Like they're the most solid. Cause now like cars are basically made to break now for more than the big conspiracy of they want me to buy more cars and blah, 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 blah. That probably too. But also like when you get in an accident, like your bumpers are made to fly off or not made to fly off, but crumple and break and
basically
save
zones.
You in the middle as like this little safety shell kind of thing.
Yeah. Everything, because if we get very sciencey for a moment, it's like everything follows the laws of inertia. Like the energy has to go somewhere, so it's either gonna like if you hit something, you're gonna stop. But if things can crumple in the way and like lower the amount of force that's gonna be exerted on that, it can lower the G force because the G force and stuff like that's what's gonna kill you. I mean, it's the G force or the it's the, what did they say? What they used to say? It's not the fall that'll kill you; it's the sudden stop at the end. It's one of those two things.
It's like if you had a crumple zone, it's kind of like a. If you were falling, but you had like a bungee cord.
Yeah.
And it like slowed you down most of the way before you had that sudden stop at the end. Probably still wouldn't feel great, but.
Right. But it can make it survivable.
Yeah.
So Volvo, the president of Volvo, he was very like, he was impacted by this accident and he probably felt like a sense of like, I got to do something to change this. Mm-hmm. So he poached Niels Bohlin from Saab. And basically like applied urgency, like nobody put pressure on him. It was just like a self-imposed thing. I want to make the safest thing. I want to re-examine like how to make people safer in vehicles.
That seems in line for Volvo.
Yeah. So inherently, right from the beginning, the first like identifying of the problem was there's basically like two problems with the 2-point lap belt that existed currently in the time. The first, I like how this is phrased, the human pelvis is hinged. So severe head, chest and spinal injuries happened. And actually, like, there's a lot of studies that show, too, like, just a lap belt, like, it'll crush organs on impact because it rides up on your hip. It just destroys your abdomen.
Yeah.
So that was the first problem. The second problem, people don't want to wear them. They're clumsy, uncomfortable. Back then, I think it was a lot more like, I know it was a lot more like your airplane buckle. Like, it sits in the middle.
Yeah.
You use two hands to get to it. It probably falls in the crack of the seat. Like, it's a pain. So their solution was this V-type, like a 3-point. And the big key thing that I've never even really thought of with seatbelts, which must age me completely, is the whole point of it was it's one-handed to install. Like you don't have to reach and grab two buckles or anything. You can use one hand to sling it on and click it to enable it.
Oh, I must be very inflexible.
You must be. Well, it's intended to be one-handed install. But even if it's two, you don't have to, like, you're not losing a part. You don't have to, like, line things up or whatever. It's a lot simpler. So that was, like, their breakthrough. Even with the design, it took 6 years of promotion to persuade a minority of Swedes to use the design, which is crazy. And this is where this story gets really weird for me. So they implemented this design. 59, it was invented and patented. And Volvo was faced with a choice. They had this design. They're the first to do it. They immediately, like you do with everything else in R&D with vehicles, they patent it. And then they kind of sat back and they're like, okay, you know, we could charge a royalty on this, like as a thing, and everybody could have it. We think this is the best thing ever. Studies show, that, and I'll get to the studies in a minute, how much more effective this is than a lap belt. But they chose to just give it to everybody. They make it open source immediately. They released it to everybody and said, hey, nobody has to license this. This is this new thing we invented, and we think it's going to change the way that like vehicle safety is approached. And so they did. They released it to the world. Yeah, which is crazy, crazy cool. And I saw an article breaking down like if they wouldn't have, like what money they would have made, even if they only charged $10 per license, like $10 per vehicle that used it on. They ran the number. It was, I mean, it was like absurd amounts of money.
Trillions, I'm sure.
Yeah, they calculated it for the first year of it, like in 1970 alone, like it would have been, you know, whatever it was, $400 trillion or something.
They could have charged literally fractions of, probably not, fractions of pennies, maybe. I don't know how many cars have been, this is showing how many cars I know have been made, but they could have charged like literally pennies. And stopped making cars.
Right. They could have become the seatbelt company, but I think that's cool. I think that speaks to them a lot.
Super cool.
That's their thing. Their true goal was to encourage mass adoption and save lives, was a quote from the president.
That's awesome.
In 67, they, you know, they're having issues getting people to adopt it, which I think is crazy. Cause like nowadays, like we've been, I don't know, 90s kid raised click it or ticket. And like, that was like a thing always.
Yeah.
Driver's Ed probably scarred us with not wearing your seatbelt. So we all do, but
they didn't have videos in Driver's Ed back then probably.
Yeah. Oh no, totally. So they, in 67, they released a study that reviewed 28,000 car accidents. So of those accidents, there was 37,511 people like involved in them. So like two people in a vehicle, three people in a vehicle, things like that. So of the accidents they examined, none of them who were wearing a 3-point seatbelt had died unless they were traveling above 60 miles an hour. So like physics can't limit some of that. But for like lower speed accidents and everything, none of them had died with that. So still they released that they're having issues with adoption. Like only, I think, forget what it was. I think by 69, only 25% of like Swedish people were like actively using their seatbelts, even though they were standard now on all the vehicles that were being.
So what were they, how do they measure? Like, is it by survey? Like, how do they know how many people are using them or not?
I assume they're doing public surveys and things like that. But at the time, you know, there's no law for it. There's no enforcing anything. Sure. It's just an option. So
yeah, it's such a weird thing to think about because, like, I don't even think about that at all. Also, all of my cars scream at me if I forget to click it by the end of my driveway.
That's where this goes from here. Then, so as a part of this, obviously, like on top of like the potential like life savings and all of that. Not financial life savings, but life, like physical life savings. There's tens of billions of dollars in like potential insurance loss savings and a financial motive to this.
Sure.
And so that's where like opposition starts coming in. So the things were crazy. And like this, again, dates me. I'm sure a lot of people who listen probably lived through this and were aware of this and maybe even have mixed feelings on this. Reading all this history makes me want to talk to Dad about this more because I'm curious what his view on all this was. But things like this. So like basically there became a thing, seatbelt deniers, and it launched this huge thing in the United States about like we're supposed to be free to like choose like what we're gonna like what we should be able to do in a vehicle. And there are three main like things that they brought up in opposition to seatbelts were personal freedoms. So seatbelts are a choice. Everyone should have the right to decide for themselves whether to use one.
Okay.
Personal choice. Seatbelts are uncomfortable or cumbersome. And a fear of technology. Seatbelts would make it difficult to escape a damaged car. In a car crash, it'd be safer to be thrown free of the wreckage beltless. That's the art.
That sounds like someone who doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's like, that's why they show car accidents in driver's
seat. I mean, there are like, there definitely are, I'm sure you've seen these. I was thinking about this when you were talking about it. Like, seems like as of recent, maybe it's within the last decade or so, of like sort of an argument for like, well, seatbelts aren't the best thing all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And like, there's been those stories where people have like not had their seatbelts on, they had a rollover, they were thrown from the vehicle to quote unquote safety. That thrown from a vehicle can never feel nice. But, and then people are like, well, maybe sometimes it's okay if you don't. It's like, yeah, but what are you going to do? Like, get into an accident and press pause and have like a bunch of options. Should I put it on now? Should I take it off? What's going to be like, you don't have, it's not Forza. You can't go rewind and then. No, let me try this scenario with my seatbelt. Like maybe that's what's going on in your head when you're sitting there in the ditch. But that's not that's not how that works. So
it's super interesting. So they it went so far like in the 80s, a state representative in Michigan proposed a bill to fine people for not wearing their seatbelts, and he was compared to Hitler, like pretty widespread. So this it gets really, really weird. The legal part of this gets weird. So in the 80s. The battle over safety belts reflected widespread criticism of the government in general, like regulating a free society. The NHTSA, which you were referencing earlier, I looked it up. They were not founded until 1970. So it took a minute. So in, let's see, in 1977, they passed a new rule that put the ball in the automaker's court. They had to install some sort of passive restraint, a system that worked automatically without driver intervention that would protect a crash test dummy from damage when hitting a wall at 35 miles an hour. So that became like the standard.
Oh.
So the only real options at the time, this was nuts to me. The only real options at the time were either airbags or something called an automatic safety belt. So the picture every Saturn from the 90s where you get in the vehicle, it automatically puts the seatbelt on for you. Those are your two options. It had to have some sort of inherently you get in the vehicle something that's there already.
Wait, is that why that was created?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I thought that, it was someone being cute.
So did I. I had no clue that this was part of that whole thing. So
yeah.
Let's see. Automatic safety belts that ran on the track, blah, blah, blah. So obviously automakers didn't love either option a lot because airbags were super expensive. And this whole automatic weird safety belt thing was even more expensive. On top of that, consumers were immediately concerned with the auto latch thing because they were worried about like, you know, what happens like if you get in a car fire, if you get in an accident and you can't get out of the car or anything. So car makers agreed to add a release latch to the thing, which side note. So before that, there wasn't a release latch.
That is, I'm with them now. That's terrifying.
I am too. Yeah. I know. I was like, come on, it's not that bad, guys. And they're like, yeah, what if we need to get out? Do we have to cut it? I'm like, wait, what? So they added a release latch, but then drivers could easily disconnect it and it rendered the belt ineffective. So now you had a really expensive piece of hardware that was always unclicked because it was super annoying for people. It buzzed all the way up to hook in, and I'm sure it caused a bunch. I can only imagine in the 70s with micro switches and the wiring and everything.
Oh,
what
gosh.
I dealt with the sunroof on my Porsche, I can imagine this was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So those are their two options. Before any of the changes could be made, Ronald Reagan won the presidency on a promise of deregulation, especially with the automotive industry. So one of the first things he did was to rescind the NHTSA rule requiring the restraints. So immediately when he did that, insurance companies sued the administration and the case went to the Supreme Court. So now you basically had like this new president, like, hey, we're deregulating. And insurance companies like, hey, we need these because otherwise like people are getting way more hurt. We're paying a lot more money in claims.
That makes sense.
So weirdly, the Supreme Court voted unanimously to block the Reagan administration and they enforced the rule instead. So that rule stood. So that was the current thing. That's going to be what everybody has to do. So in 85, somebody, I'm not sure this is a legislator, passed a kind of sneaky law. And this is where, this is kind of like where it stands and like why we are where we are now. So they passed a law that said, okay, how would this go? Automakers are going to be required to install driver's side airbags in all new cars unless 2/3 of the states passed a mandatory seatbelt law by April 1st, 1989. So they gave them 4 years and basically like threatened the automotive industry like, hey, we're going to force you to do the airbag thing unless you can get your states, if you can get 2/3 of the states in the U.S. to pass a mandatory seatbelt law so that seatbelts are a thing and we don't have to push the airbag thing.
Interesting. So
immediately in come the lobbyists, and they started lobbying all the things, whatever. I forget how fast it happened, but it worked. I think there's only 8 states who like held hard lines and like, no, we're not going to enforce this. But it was enough to pass, and that's what became a thing. So in New York was the first state to pass the mandatory seatbelt law, followed by New Jersey. This was in 1985. The fine, guess what the fine was in 1985 if you didn't wear your seatbelt?
What?
You have to guess.
Oh, I accept
guess what it means.
That was rhetorical. $50, which is like $100,000 today.
You guessed correct. It was $50.
Oh,
yeah. So
that's what's up.
Immediately when that law went into effect, they, you know, they're polling, they're checking, whatever, and immediately compliance jumped to 70% of people in New York using seatbelts.
Sounds right.
Because they didn't want the fee.
Yeah.
So there was an article then that was written on it in the Time, and it said, as one Bronx resident grumbled, this is not supposed to be Russia where the government tells you what to do and when to do it.
I love what we were upset about back then.
Dude. So there was still a lot of resistance. This part was great too. There's still a lot of resistance by people who thought this was a terrible infringement of their liberty. People were selling t-shirts that made it look like you were wearing a seatbelt.
So you I've have seen to wear those. That's driving, funny.
Which is awesome. So let's see. Car companies, this is the last couple pieces on this. Car companies were no more enthusiastic about pushing seatbelts on customers. After all, it was a bad advertisement. If seatbelts are such an important feature, is the car really safe to drive? So there was like a lot of pushback from auto manufacturers and like, yeah, this is safer, but like it makes us look bad. Yeah.
No, no car is safe to drive.
Right. Right.
There's just there's a spectrum of like how less dangerous is the car. That's basically what they're measuring. They're not measuring a safety amount. It's how little dangerous it is.
Yes. Yes. So, the most, let's see, police began to report. So basically it became like a public, like, let's get people on board with this. It took a long time to like get people to adopt. It wasn't until, like, I forget who, what Princess Diana, I think, was in a car accident. She wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and they had ruled if she was wearing a seatbelt. Did I say it wrong? Or are you just laughing at me?
I'm just saying, come on, Diana, wear your seatbelt.
I was like, I was already not confident enough reporting on that story. So easy there.
You're like, I made that up.
Thin ice. Yeah. I was like, well, she wasn't even real. She was in a car accident, I guess. And they, the publications were, they were saying that like whatever the accident was, it easily could have been prevented. Or at least it could have been lessened. The injuries could have been lessened if she was wearing a seatbelt. Mm. But then like the nationwide, like public education campaign thing, like went all in, like police began to report seatbelt use along with car crash fatalities, photographs of beltless car crash victims made their way into the local news. Mm. Studies demonstrating the mortality benefits associated with the use of seatbelts were touted. Signs reminding drivers to use seatbelts became common. Celebrities appeared in public service announcements asserting that a seatbelt was the right thing to do. Basically, like everywhere, people were getting plastered with this like message that like seatbelts were the thing.
We've just always been doing the same thing. It's just another issue.
100%. Yeah. And that's so further on in this article, I was on some, I don't even know what the heck site I was on, but right after this, they're like, and really seatbelts are just like the COVID vaccine. And then they went like super down the rails there. We won't go there.
Sounds about right.
I thought this was super interesting. It's kind of an interesting model, right? So like Volvo had this opportunity to make gajillions of money and become the seatbelt company, but instead they want to do something for the common good. And weirdly, they did it. And it took like 40 years for it to like become a thing, and kind of only became a thing that's like common because like the government threatened to fine people for not doing it because insurance companies didn't want to pay claims. And like, that's what
it was. They made it to not be a financial thing. It ended up being a financial thing.
Right.
Basically.
Right. Isn't that weird?
And then it was lobbyists and news and celebrities and stuff like that.
Yeah. So there is one modern example of the same kind of thing with like the seatbelt thing and thinking, okay, if this becomes open source, it can impact a lot more people potentially. And of course, coming from Tesla. So recently, they kind of took the same approach and they announced open source battery patents and battery technology
in an attempt
to stimulate the EV market. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember reading about this a few months ago. But that's their whole thought. It's like, if this is open source, if it's not all proprietary to us, you know, maybe they can have an idea that then, you know, GM and their Ultium platform or whatever it is, they you know, they run with the ball a little bit down the road and then Ford will figure something out and everybody will kind of collaborate that way. So I thought that's interesting. Like always,
yeah, that's cool.
You know, the innovation and implementation, that's like my interesting takeaway is like, obviously the financial motive was the thing that like enacted, like forced in air quotes, like forced people to do it or made it very inconvenient to not use it. But after the invention of this thing, it became standard in like pretty much every vehicle. It just became a thing people didn't like to use. I read a report too, like 70s and 80s, people were just like cutting them out, like literally just cutting the belt out of their vehicle out of like rebellion for it, which is just adorable.
That's pretty funny.
But yeah, I think that's crazy. So anyway, there's the history of the whole Volvo seatbelt debacle. They are in fact the inventors of the 3-point seatbelt, and they freely gave it away for legislators worldwide to enforce by threat of money.
Yeah.
So there you go.
For other people to take advantage of it for their own financial gain. Like, thank you for not charging for this.
Why make Volvo rich when you can make a U.S. senator rich?
Ooh, conspiracy theory. They didn't try to give it away. Nobody wanted it.
They didn't try to give it away. Nobody wants. Continue. I'm in.
Okay. Well, you just said it took 40 years for it to become standard practice.
Yep.
I would bet some money that they were trying to, because they patented it, right?
Yeah.
And I bet there was a monetization plan, right? And then they're like, no one wants it. So that, not that they gave up, but they got it pushed through to be standard, even though they couldn't monetize on it. Because they're basically, well, we already invented it. We already spent all this R&D money.
Yeah, that was very much, I mean, it was kind of like, I think it was reported in the time too. Like that was their purpose from the beginning. Like there never was they announced it in their vehicle and then they released it open source with that message. Okay. Like everybody, I know
that was a very weak,
like,
that was a very weak argument, very weak conspiracy theory.
I like the conspiracy though. I like more. I wish that there was, I know I was trying to find automotive conspiracy theories for a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And there was like a ton about DeLorean and all that. And I'm just like, I'm surprised that there wasn't some weird like, some weird confiscation thing, or I don't know what it would have even been to like try to make something like this a thing. But yeah, I don't know. It's just funny. It's interesting to read all the thing. And I was reading another article about it that was talking about, it was a modern day politician who was asked to critique it and say like, if he thought it was constitutional and all that kind of stuff. But then they were asking him about, like, yeah, it was crazy that people didn't want it. Like it was crazy that, this was the whole thing and people would wear, you know, like the shirts with the fake on it or whatever. And this report, I think, was happening before, it was before COVID and all that stuff. But even then, they were asking him like, yeah, it's crazy. It's just nuts that they didn't want to do it. And he's like, the guy was like, can I be honest? Like, I think if we tried to pass something like this right now, it wouldn't happen. Like, there's no way it could happen now. It's only worse now than it was then,
right?
Politically divisive. For sure. You know? So there's like no way something like that would pass nowadays. It's kind of a miracle it did when it did, because it saved so many lives. And so I don't know. It's interesting. As somebody who's typically not, mostly not a fan of government involvement in anything, it's like an interesting one that like the government, it's like, hey, you have to have these things. Otherwise we're going to fine you for using our roads to not do it. So it's weird.
Yeah. That seems like, and maybe it's just because it's something we've lived with for a long time. Cause like you said, we should talk to Dad about that. See what he lived through.
Very
that
curious.
As a driver.
Cause also he's kind of the attitude I feel like that would be like, yeah, they're not going to, like, what do you think they're going to do? And, like, I could see his Trans Am.
Fine you $50.
I don't know, though.
That's what they're going to do. It's that simple.
That is exactly. They it's so funny already, seeing which is 1/6 of the cost of your charger when you bought it.
Yeah. that's actually exactly correct. It's funny. Nowadays, like, it's so, like, I don't even think about it, right? And now there's the chimes, and I'm sure that was a legislation thing, as well as airbags in the passenger and driver's side and blah blah, all that stuff. You can't even buy a car today, I don't think. I'd be someone send me if you could buy one in the US, a car that you can get without like airbags and the chime, stuff like that. But it's funny, every single car group except for ours, our people are all awesome, but every single car group has at least one person who posts in there like, hey guys, has anybody figured out a way to code out the seatbelt ding? And everyone's like, wear your seatbelt. Like, I just drive like around town. I don't want to like, it's so annoying to have to put it on and off.
Yeah.
It's like, what world are you like? What are you doing?
Yeah.
First of all, here's your options. Clip it behind your back. Right. So just keep it clipped. Right.
Right. Right.
Easy. Or go to the junkyard, cut a seatbelt out of another car and have the little thing. Right, they literally sell them on Amazon. Those things.
I was gonna say, have you seen the Bluetooth whatever they call them, chime eliminators, and it's just that. It's just the end of a seatbelt that people pull up and plug in.
Yeah.
Like the amount of effort it takes to do that. And then like on top of that, I would imagine because it's legal now, or like because it's a law, I wonder what the insurance nightmare becomes if you get in an accident without a seatbelt on or you use one of those devices, what coverage differences you experience, you know?
Yeah.
Like I bet it's like, oh, hey, you violated that. You can't do it anymore. Like you can't claim this, but I don't know. I don't know what the
repercussions are. I bet they could fight the personal injury part of it too, but they could go as, they could go as far as anything. Because if you're losing control and you're not restrained, you're going to be all over the place. You're going to be all over the wheel and the pedals. It's not going to be good.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, there it is weird how many people are like, hey, you know, for Volkswagens, just got VCDS. Like, how do you code this thing out? And I love all those comments of like, you just plug it in. Like, you just clip your seatbelt.
Yeah, here's what you
do.
The
other ones are like,
in your car.
You give your keys to someone else. What?
You pull your seatbelt across. The group I'm remembering that from specifically was for the BMW X3 that I had, which of course.
Of course. That was right after the post. Like, how do you delete the turn signal stock?
it was. They're like, I didn't even know I had that. But bing. All right. Last section of the day. I've got a couple. Just a couple interesting things. So largest recalls in history. So we talked about the seatbelts and people not wanting that. And
this really is a history episode, isn't it?
It's kind of a history episode, isn't it? Welcome to Third Carriage Podcast. I don't know. I didn't think of anything. We'll cut something in if
Welcome
I think
to
of something.
Third Century Auto.
There it is. That works. That actually sounds like a car insurance. Third Century. That sounds like a car insurance.
It sounds like where you go get like a pretty terrible rate on an automotive loan.
Yeah, it's just 2,700 payments in 1999. Okay, so largest car recalls. Okay, so this is a very, very long list, right? Because it went from like 4 recalls to 60 million recalls. So I took out a few that I thought were kind of interesting. I wanted to tell you.
Okay, cool.
Two of them are Ford. But those are the most, maybe interesting isn't the right word, but probably the most iconic. And some of you guys might even remember the stuff. I knew this about the first one here. So Ford Pintos, they recalled 1.5 million vehicles out of 2 million cars in production. So like a big chunk, if we're looking at percentages of their cars, because I had no idea. If you were to ask me how many Ford Pintos were made, I'd be like, I forgot that was a car. So out of 40, 2 million, so 75% of their vehicles were recalled. In the 10 years of production, I think it was. Anyways, I knew this about Pintos. I don't know why. It was just probably something Dad had mentioned when we were looking for our first cars, cruising through Craigslist back in the day. We probably found a bunch of cheap Pintos, and he's like, no, those things blow up. So that was the problem, is they had a gas tank issue that would leak fuel and, of course, ignite and catch fire. So they didn't, they didn't really blow up. That was, that was like a little bit of fabrication, but they had a bad reputation after that for the faulty parts.
Holy cow.
There were deaths recorded from it too. Pretty serious, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's Ford.
Wow.
First Ford.
Okay.
Next one's Volkswagen. Okay. And I had to pause to read
the
data again
real
quick.
Big one?
No. That's what I was going to say. So this is not Dieselgate.
Not the one I've been involved in.
Right. So this was Wipergate, the earliest recall issue with Volkswagen. So this was between 1947 and 1969, and they recalled 3.7 million Volkswagen bugs, which just shows the popularity of that car during that time. It was like maybe one of, like you probably saw them one every like three cars, more or less.
Wow. I didn't know that there was like recalls back then. I didn't know that there was that many Beetles back then. That's insane.
Yeah,
I wonder if Grandpa Morgan had to have a recall done on his
Beetle
when he bought
it. That was a big, I don't have the exact production years or how many they made during that time, but I'm guessing that was a big chunk of it.
Wow.
So the issue with it was the windshield wiper was just screwed. Like they are not, I don't know if you guys have ever had to change like a wiper arm. It's kind of a pain in the butt. It's like fitted, pressed on nowadays anyways, like plastic usually, and then a nut and then like a cover cap on it or whatever. Mm-hmm. So then it was just, pressed steel and it was just screwed on. So there's an issue where the screw would just always come loose on these models for the 22 years that they made them. And it would cause the wipers to either be ineffective or just fly off altogether. like just be gone. So not as dangerous of a recall, right? Yeah. More cars, like over two times the amount of cars recalled for that. But it was more or less just like it was an NHTSA. Is that how you say it? NHTSA? Yeah. I thought it was the other way around. Like recall that they did, but it wasn't like it wasn't killing people or whatever. There weren't windshield wipers like flying through people's cars like arrows and stuff like that on the highway.
Yeah.
Because they can only go 42 miles an hour. So it wasn't really hurting anybody at that point. But it's always interesting. Also, before I move on to another Ford recall, another fun fact about the Beetle. Did you know that the Volkswagen Beetle was first made by Ferdinand Porsche himself? It was designed by him. Yeah.
Okay.
It was actually commissioned by Adolf Hitler. So anyways, next car. Ford again, back to America. Two-time World War II champs. Suck it. 1972.
Yeah, what is DeStefano's thing? Back-to-back World War champs?
Yeah, that's what it is. Back-to-back World War champs. Suck it, the rest of the world.
Speaking of Hitler, so America.
Yeah, jeez.
Jeez.
We're getting like 25 strikes this episode.
I got to change the LED behind my monitor to not be red right now.
Yeah. Change that. Like, share, and subscribe, please. So Ford, speaking of seatbelts, if you scroll back 5 minutes, we were talking about seatbelts. In 71, so Ford recalled nearly every car it made between 1970 and 1971 model years. They had a defective shoulder harness that could cause seatbelts to fail. So if I'm reading this right, I believe this was 1970 to 1971. I'm just trying to think of what you were talking about with the seatbelt times. This was before this was in place, right, that they needed to be this V shoulder strap thing. Because from my understanding reading this, I didn't get like pictures of it or anything. I couldn't find a ton. It was two belts though. So it was like a shoulder belt and like a lap belt thing.
Well, they used to, so I think that was an option for people too. There used to be, because I remember, I feel like I've been in cars that had that where it was the, like it was a waist belt, but there was an additional shoulder belt you could bring down.
Yeah, that's what it was.
But the Volvo thing was just, it was a one piece V design. But it wasn't until 77 that it became like it started to become law for places, but it did become a standard feature on like all vehicles to like have them. So it wasn't a law at this point, but interesting that they recalled it before there was a law requiring it.
Yeah. So it was a dual belt system basically. Right. So it wasn't the standard V belt.
Interesting.
And they did a survey, which now makes sense. I was like, this is stupid that people didn't know, but, they did a survey that less than 5% of the drivers, and front seat passengers actually used the shoulder belts. So that had like
less than 5%.
Yeah. So that had led to basically the lap belt issue was like an overuse issue because they weren't using both of them. So it had been breaking because of that. So anyways, that was, let me see how many vehicles do they say? No, they didn't say, but all vehicles basically they made from 1970 to 1971. They had to recall those.
It's bizarre.
So Ford's on here twice. I mean, there was other cars in this list, but I got just one last one I thought would be good to go through. So Pontiac, they actually recalled 100%. So this is the only one that, because Ford recalled nearly every car, so not all of them. So this is the only one on the list that was 100% of the vehicles had to be recalled. Which a lot of you guys probably know this vehicle. If you've ever watched Breaking Bad, it's a pretty iconic car, the Pontiac Aztec.
What?
Yep.
They recalled all of them?
All 119,000, which is not that many. They didn't make that many of them. 119,000. So they recalled them because they realized they're ugly and nobody likes them. So that was why.
I didn't see that one coming. Boom. Good job.
Gotcha. I had to add one in there. That was more fun.
That's awesome.
So
that's super awesome. So
yeah, that's the recalls.
Thanks for, that's interesting. It's cool to like, I don't know. Let us know what you guys think. Diving in the history of some stuff. What's your favorite like history lesson car thing that you think we should look into? Stuff super interesting. It's weird to see like where things came from, and especially like, I mean, it happens. We talk about the good side of it all the time, like with different technologies and stuff, and the way that things impact and change how people use technology and things in cars. It's interesting to see some of the good, some of the bad, and then some of the oopses from these recalls of things that were, you know, that they thought would be great, or they tried something, or they cut a corner manufacturing wise, and now they got to like fix all this stuff. We didn't even get into like lemon policy stuff and what all that looks like.
There's so much to it. We might have to do a part two for this whole episode with other history stuff.
But definitely, so like we said earlier, like we're if you're in Spotify right now, below there will be a question thing for you to answer that. What's your favorite like historic car thing like this that we could dive into and research? I don't even know if we'll cover it on a podcast thing. We just want to know. If you're not listening to this on there, it's going to be on the Facebook page too, a question there that you guys can ask and answer. But yeah, super interesting. Curious what you guys come up with or curious what the like, I don't know. I feel like we all have weird on top of our own vehicle stuff, just like fun facts about cars that are kind of at bay waiting for somebody to ask the fatal question that will trigger the response here. Yeah,
everybody knows like the specifics about their niche of car.
Oh,
like the little tiny issues it had or the history of why things are the way they are, which I find, I find pretty interesting.
Just waiting for barely an excuse of a question to be like, oh, why is it that way? That's interesting. And it's like, oh, interesting. Glad you, it's like, then you turn into that. Have you seen the videos? I think he's on TikTok of the guy. It's like your average Redditor responding to stuff.
That guy's my favorite.
I love it so much.
Technically, if you knew what you were talking about at all, he's always got like the sweater vest on.
Did you just imply that I incurred this?
Yeah.
So funny. But anyway, thank you guys for joining us for the podcast this week. Join the Facebook crew. Check out thirdpedalpodcast.com. It's got the links to everything else. Check us out that way. Engage, send stuff back. We're excited to see what you guys are working on for your summer projects. And we're excited to see you guys out at shows.
Yeah.
But enjoy the hopefully nice weather. And we'll catch you next week.
Peace. Ready?
Okay.
And there was like a whole bridge thing too.
Yeah.
Dude, I hear that song in my head at least once a week.